Hi, this is Christopher Sparrow, and this is the iTech Gear Weekly, episode number 16. I'll take hostile takeovers for $43 billion, recorded Saturday, April 16th, 2022. As I said, I am Christopher Sparrow, the editor-in-chief of iTechGear.org, and with me today, the late, the great, but never, never don't hesitate, Mr. Chris Cavoule, a former contributing editor over at Gear Diary and Pocket Now. What's up, G?
We're just having a week, so but yes. glad to be here. And you are more energetic than I've heard you in a while. I'm a little scared.
It's just the delirium. Don't worry, it'll fade.
Oh my goodness. Yes, or the meds. I'm not sure which, huh?
Yeah, well, you know. You know, DuPont is one of our sponsors, Better Living Through Chemistry. So
there you go.
All right, laughing there, Mr. Joel McLaughlin, former contributing writer over Gear Diary, and currently the Linux Link Tech Show host and host of the Living in the Shade of the 80s Arcade podcast. What's up, Mr. Joel?
Oh, I'm not doing too bad. Seems like I'm fresh off vacation on the show, but I'm not. It happened a couple of weeks ago, but I'm glad to be back.
I know, and we've got a little bit to hear from you on a keep over topic from last year, but of course, certainly last this week, but never last in anyone's hearts. Mr. Larry McJunkin, former co-owner of Wugnet Publications. President of how many different computer clubs and sysadmin?
We don't even count anymore. I've given up. But nice to be here. But you guys know, you guys are all coffee drinkers like me. I know you are, especially Chris and Joel.
Yes.
But Chris, I think Chris G is too a little bit. But
you know that
feeling that you have right before you can't have that first cup of coffee in the morning that because the coffee's not ready or you're out of something.
Yes, that's my
day to day. This is tax day for me. I've procrastinated to the last moment, and I'm not in a great mood. But I'll try and not let that show. But
you know what, Larry? Me too.
God, I hate taxes.
I've got them about 75% done, and tomorrow is my wrap up on them. And yeah, I'm with you.
I forced myself to do them today. That's the only reason they're done.
See, what you need, Larry, is you need a secretary like I got in my wife. I don't mess with that.
I mean, Brenda would do it. She would do it, I know.
Yeah, but I'm my wife's secretary. So there you go.
Good luck for you.
Thank you. But, you know,
yes, sir.
You know, I want to go ahead, though, and I want to kick things off this week because with a discussion that we were having last time between the three of us. Joel was venturing out and about on his way to lovely Hershey, Pennsylvania.
You can call it Chocolate Town because it is Chocolate Town. But that's call it that.
On his way to Chocolate Town. I'm going to go stand in the corner now. But anyway, we were having a discussion related to CarPlay versus Android Auto. And you were in the process of actively using both while you were on your trip, depending on who had a better reception or who had whatever it was, because the head unit in your vehicle will do both, obviously. So talk to me about your experience. How did that go for you?
Okay. So for those who don't know, like the layout of Pennsylvania, there is a big massive route that goes through the middle of it, actually through the southern section of it, called the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Okay.
70, right?
70. Yeah. No, 76.
80. 76.
76? 76. Yeah. So, yeah. I-76. And then I forget what the Northeast extension is, but that's not 76. But 76 is the one that consists of the Turnpike. I think for a little bit, 70 may go with it until it hits the Breezewood. So anyway, one of the things that you have to do on there is between where I got on at New Stanton, Pennsylvania, which is where basically it's right around where actually I grew up a lot of in that area too. But between New Stanton and where I got off the pike at Gettysburg Pike on the west side of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, there are four, count them, four tunnels There's the Allegheny Tunnel, the Tuscarora Tunnel, and the Kittatinny and Blue Mountain tunnels are one right after the other. Why they just didn't make one giant tunnel there, I don't know. But anyway, so usually the first tunnel comes pretty quickly after like the second exit that I pass on the Pike. And that I went through it fine. Android Auto was in use all that way from Ohio to there. And it went fine until I got to right around the Tuscarora Tunnel, and it would basically lose connection. Now I'm using the wireless because that's how I always use it for the most part. But I may change how I do that, especially if I know there are tunnels on the route. Mm-hmm. Because what happened is I don't know, there may be something that Pennsylvania has right near those tunnels that causes interference to the, because it basically uses the Wi-Fi connection.
Right.
All right.
Right.
And
Joel, those are called mountains.
That's right.
Yeah.
But
big mountains.
They are. But the what would happen is, and you know, it's in the same vehicle, so you know, and I wouldn't think that. So I think they're like, they got something there, maybe some monitoring thing that throws off some interference to the Wi-Fi in that area. So I lost connection. 9 times out of 10, it would reconnect right away. But for some reason, right after I go through Blue Mountain, it disconnected and I couldn't get it back. All right. So wife had her phone in. I said, plug your phone in. We'll use CarPlay the rest of the way. So go ahead, get the route set up on your phone, plug it in. She did that. And that worked fine for the rest of the way. Now we actually didn't even have any music on. And I think that's my one criticism of both of them was that there's no easy way without exiting Android Auto or CarPlay. There's no easy way to access the radio features on the vehicle, be it AM, FM, or Sirius.
That is
absolutely
true.
Unless
there's a Sirius, unless there's a Sirius app link, unless you've got the Sirius app, Sirius XM app on your phone. But even then, that's a streaming app, and not a satellite.
Not using the satellite, right?
Right.
That's right.
Which I think in the car is. Not right. I think it should use the satellite link,
but it's because both of them really take over the entire screen. Okay.
They do. And there's no way to control the AM, the FM or the satellite radio.
You lose access to your car's temperature, outside temperature reading. You don't see that anymore either. When those pop up and take over.
That depends on the vehicle.
Well, yeah. It may be the instrument cluster screen that I have. I haven't looked, but
it's all I'm saying is that it does take over. It takes over the whole screen, and anything that's coming from your car, you can't see anymore.
Right. I've got that on my dash above my speedometer. So that's
the number one, my number one kind of criticism of just using it. The other was the wireless kept cutting out, and I kind of understand that. I don't put that entirely on either Apple or Google in that case.
No, but, no that's going to be on
the next time I'm going to have
the car. That's the cell carrier in the car, right?
Right.
So
yeah, and I bet you it would be fine if I would have just had the a USB A to USB C cable hooked into my phone. So
maybe. Yep. Maybe. Yep. I still see that as a 5G, 5G or a 4G LTE based internet signal that's either coming from a SIM that's in the vehicle through a cellular radio that's in the vehicle, or that's your phone having trouble.
And to be clear, it would be my phone in this case because I don't have the 4G turned on.
Okay.
But if it's accessing internet, it was just not losing connection. The phone was fine. If I picked up the phone, I could see maps and stuff like that on the phone, and I can open up Facebook, all that crap. And it never recovered until when we got to the hotel I didn't park where I was going to permanently park, or kind of park close to the front door, so I go in and get checked in and all that.
Okay.
And then when I hop back in, family grabbed a key, went up to the room because they both had to go. You know, long car ride. Euphemism. What do you have to do?
Exactly.
So, bio break.
So when I went to go move the car, turned it on, it connected right up. So
now is this both systems had this problem, or Android had this problem, or Apple had this problem, or what?
I bet you it would probably be both systems, because I don't think I think it was something at those tunnels. I mean, I've seen that too from time to time, and it depends when I'm driving nearby. Hmm. Like it could be like sensors from a security system somewhere. I don't know. Yeah.
Sure.
So
sure.
Yeah. You know, it's wireless interference. It's the same thing that I would complain about on driving through downtown Columbus using my handheld ham radio. I'd hear Intermod on the radio, and it would make certain frequencies useless.
Yeah, because I'm kind of back where Chris said a minute ago, because I know I've experienced those problems, but it's not a Wi-Fi interference issue. So my phone can be wireless in the car connected to the car system, but I've lost cell signal for some reason.
Right.
Or it
could be Bluetooth as well.
That's fair. But Bluetooth you don't usually have the range on Bluetooth. So if somebody's doing something that's interfering with Bluetooth in their building, you're not likely to hit it as you go by. It's very near zone only.
Agreed.
So I don't know, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah, okay, it's strange.
It is.
So you know, speaking of Bluetooth and Android Auto and CarPlay, I read something today that truly was interesting, and it makes sense in some ways. But you know, as we all know, we're just not there as an auto industry and all makes and models of our cars having both wireless and wired for either or both CarPlay and Android Auto. My case, I've got a rather new Lexus, but it makes no difference. It does not have wireless.
Interesting.
So I'm looking at all the options out there, reading all the articles, because I'm going to buy a dongle. I know I am. It's just going to happen. And I come across something very interesting in Apple's favor here. Apple, their product, CarPlay, works with nearly every dongle made, period. Anything you can get off of Amazon, it's going to work.
Yep.
Google, on the other hand, is only blessing one model, period. They say if you want to buy a Motorola MA1, Mic Alpha 1, it will work with our product, and it will work flawlessly. And it's so true that you can't find one of these things. They started out selling them a year and a half ago for $80, and now they're up to $170. Motorola's still charging $89, Amazon, all the stores, they're up there double that or more. You can't find them. So I found it kind of interesting that Google put the lock on it and said, hey, we're not going to, our product just doesn't work with anything but this. And when somebody else gets something better, we'll let you know. But
I was going to say, my wireless connection between my iPhone and my car has been extremely solid. Whereas I will say that my Pixel 6 Pro is iffy on wireless, and I almost always have to connect it in with USB to get it.
The April update, Chris, fixed several of my Android Auto problems. I don't know why or how, or I didn't even notice it in the change log, but
I have not noticed just since the change. Okay, I'll check again since the change.
One more time. Mine's working a lot better.
So, but it has worked very reliably on USB
Most other articles I read on Android Auto or CarPlay say, if you're going on a long trip and you can afford to do it, plug that puppy in, because you're always going to have better music. And I agree with that.
Yeah. Bluetooth audio versus the wired audio.
You know, here to the grocery store. Sure. You don't have to bother, but.
Yeah, 90% of the time I use the Bluetooth. So, I mean, I usually don't use Bluetooth and wireless. I didn't have too many problems. So all it means is when I go to drive down, if I end up going to Charlotte for the Southeast Linux Fest right now, I'm not exactly sure if it's happening. But I do have time off. So I will be using a wire connection because I do have to go through a tunnel right about West Virginia.
That's fair.
Virginia, I will tell border. You, I bought, if you remember, right. it was a pick I had a number of weeks
ago. Yeah, it was.
I had purchased a wireless CarPlay dongle, and I am back to plugging my phone into the wire.
Really?
Yes, and I will tell you why. All right. You turn on Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and you pair with the dongle, and then it doesn't, it uses Wi-Fi after. All right. There is a noticeable delay between what goes on with your phone and what goes on with Wi-Fi and the dongle. And it doesn't always sync up or connect.
Okay.
At least with the one that I bought. All right. Hmm. And it may be because I bought an aftermarket head unit, and I don't have quote unquote native CarPlay in my car. All right. Or it just could be that.
Got it.
I just picked the wrong adapter, right? I don't know. No. But what I will tell you is that it got to the point where, you know, it was a crapshoot,
right?
Connected or
that's not good.
All right, it connected. It either connected and it connected right away, or it would never connect. All right,
interesting.
So yeah. I get where, you know. I thought it was going to work out. When I recommended it as a pick, it was working very, very well, but it hasn't worked. I haven't taken it out of the vehicle. It just plugs into the USB port. And then, you go ahead and like I said, you know, you pair with it and it does that away, identifies the phone, and then hooks up through Wi-Fi after that. But
yep,
honest to goodness.
Well, if I ever get this Motorola, I'll let you guys know.
That would be awesome. Cool. Because I would love to.
Yeah,
the reviews are amazing on it. They all just say it just walks on water. So
we'll see what happens, because I would like to be able to have something like that, as long as it worked consistently, you know.
Yeah.
And did what it was supposed to do. I mean, I've got a MagSafe holder for the phone in the car, right? And it you know, is supposed to work. Now, you said the Motorola does work with both, right? CarPlay and Android Auto?
Absolutely.
Yeah, see? Yep. You can get a hold of one, then grab it. Awesome.
Yep.
So
other than the connection issues.
Yeah.
One thing I did notice, and I'm going to be clear, I don't make a lot of phone calls using Android Auto or my phone in the car. Usually if I do, it's usually to my dad or something. So what I have discovered, if you say, okay, G, call, blah, 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 it does make the phone call, but you have to go back and hit the home button. What I ended up doing in order to actually make it work, yeah, I could still talk to him, but what would happen is the sound would come out of the handset, not out of the stereo system. Mm. Not exactly sure why that is, but I would go in to hit the home button, and there's a way via the phone app on the car to tell it to go, instead of from that handset, go over the...
That could well be what mine was doing, because mine still wouldn't yep. connect the phone
so calls. So once they do Android. That... Once I do that, if I use the OKG, you know, that's fine. And the phone works right. And if I, for example, like today, my church sent out a little voicemail thingy, and my phone rang, and I just hit the, we were going to the store at the time. I hit the button on the screen thing and the voice message played through the car stereo. No problem. Okay. Now if I hit the button on the steering wheel, it would always come through the right way, you know, and it would look up my phone contact that way. But I like the OKG thing better because I don't have to hit a button. but I still end up having to hit a button anyway.
Oh, see, the button on my steering wheel didn't work correctly for it. It would make the call, but it would never come out. The screen would say it was dialing, and then nothing would happen every time.
So I'm saying right now it's early times, and I think that I think that's where we're at with those. I mean, it's 100 times better than any system that the car companies have for nav. So there's that.
I'm with kind of with you, Joe. My general feeling is that both these systems are adequate, I guess, for the most part. I still think there's some room to be worked on the Android side on the phone.
Definitely.
Handling. But in generally, the Apple is more reliable in general today. I would say the interfacing on the Apple is probably a generation better than what I'm seeing on Android Auto in my use so far. But it's both early, and the Android Auto has the capability of potentially going a lot farther and doing a lot more. I don't think it's there yet. I think it's about a generation behind, certainly from the user interface perspective and the consistency and polish perspective. But I think they both will do an adequate job for most people. And I do think that they are getting better constantly. They're changing all the time. Really, so,
yep. And it's far superior to most car systems. Although I will say the one thing they did get right in my 2017, and really I think it has the same option if you use the nav system in my 2022. Is how they, like, you can have the radio on one side of the screen and the nav on one side of the screen. Right. CarPlay does that pretty well, although not radio. It's going to be whatever's on your phone.
Right.
But so that's really the only thing that GM got right.
Interesting is I've watched the car systems over the years. They're getting closer and closer to what CarPlay and Android Auto are doing. In terms of their
they're getting visuals. More mature. Yeah.
And they're looking more like what those other two are doing, which is, I think it's kind of fascinating that that's the direction they're heading.
Duh. But anyway, I mean, it worked really well for what I needed it for. It didn't get me lost. I will say, we'll see the thing is if we, both these, because I used the built-in nav when I went down the last time to Charlotte, because it's all I had. Although I was trying to think, I probably also I kind of drove the same direction when I went down to Roanoke for my aunt's funeral. And at that time, I had a phone. In fact, I still have it. I think it's in the car, like a deal to hold your phone sitting in the cup holder. And I kind of used both, to be honest. I had the Google Maps up on the phone, or Waze. I can't remember one of the two.
Yeah.
And then I had the nav system, and they both work. But the thing that both of them did is on the way back, they wanted me to go a different way. That seems to be it's weird. I don't know why that is.
It's a traffic thing, maybe? You know, that's all I can think. Construction or traffic or something?
Well, and Southern Ohio is pretty rural, so I mean...
Yeah,
really. I mean, so, we'll see what happens when I'm using just Google Maps on the way back up from Charlotte, if I end up going down there. Like, because right now, they haven't updated their website yet, so who knows? But...
Well, good luck with that, huh?
CarPlay and Android Auto, good stuff.
Well, they are decent systems that work with your phones and keeping you as distraction free as possible. Hopefully, the systems will get a little bit better. There'll be updates that'll come in the devices' operating systems, i.e., your iPhone or your Android phone. And they will translate to the car well.
I think the one takeaway I think we all kind of agree on is that with all these systems, I'd like to see a little more interaction. I think you all agree that we'd like to see more interaction between the car's data and what CarPlay and Android Auto are doing.
Yeah,
we'd like to see some of that come through a little better.
Leave me a part of the screen that I can put the radio on or something.
Give me a window. Even other car data. Sometimes there's car data you want to pop up. Yeah, give me some choices there. Let me, you know, the car's generating a lot of information. I should be able to use it.
Yep.
Or read it.
I agree. Well, you know, it'll be nice. Like I said, it'll be nice to see what's going on. But speaking of Apple, you know, I hear that they are crying afoul of Meta, formerly Facebook Corporation. They're calling them, Apple's calling them hypocrites for wanting nearly a 50% commission on VR purchases.
Yeah, on certain VR purchases, not all, but yeah, still.
And pot. All I gotta say is pot meat kettle.
Yes,
but
they're probably thinking, well, we only charge 30% though.
Correct.
Yeah. Right.
Or mostly, and only for those folks that make more than $1 million a year.
I got news for you though. Ever since they bought Oculus Rift, I have friends who have had plans to buy the new system that said, nope, I'm done.
And I've said the same thing. Yep. I have the first, not Oculus Rift, but I have the first Oculus Quest.
Yep.
First gen. And they not only destroyed they ruined the hardware on the second gen. They've made eye adjustments worse. And they put it all under the Facebook Meta branding. And you had to have the Facebook account. And made me say, I'm done. I will not buy from them again.
I know more people that say they're
completely
done.
I completely agree.
So Apple's saying it because Facebook had tried to take Apple to task. That's the reason Apple's saying what they say.
Yes,
because Facebook tried to take Apple to task for their pricing and for their percentage that they were taking. And that's why they're hypocrites, because they, you know, at least Apple said, yeah, this is what we're taking. They didn't criticize somebody else for taking a certain amount until now. And Facebook, to be fair, Meta's not doing it across the board. Although I will say this much. VR titles are extremely expensive within their stores, compared to like other mobile titles, for example. And I understand the development work. I understand all that, but they're really all at high end retail pricing. They really are. You know, they're in the price range is what we would pay for most, you know, PC or Xbox or those kinds of games. So
the worst part is you have to have a relatively beefy PC to plug it into too.
Absolutely true.
Yeah.
But this is even on the standalone titles like the Quest uses. You still pay these premium prices on it to begin with. Forget the percentage cut they're taking. They're premium pricing to begin with. Then they're taking their cut. And then what they want to do is what Meta's trying to do is they have their sort of Horizon VR environment inside the environment, if you will. And that's where they want to charge this higher pricing, if I'm understanding it correctly, is within that environment.
Yep.
And that's craziness. I mean, that's just like, they think their VR environment's going to take off, but I don't know that people care about that environment that they're, you know, that they're creating inside of the VR devices. I don't.
Well, it feels like second life. It feels like that a little bit. And it
feels
like
a bad knockoff of Second Life is what it feels like.
Right. You know, it's like, I think people just want to play the damn game. You know?
I think there are some people that hope for a future that's kind of like we saw in Ready Player One. I think a lot of people kind of hope that we get there. The technologies certainly aren't there to put us there yet, but I think Meta thinks that's kind of what they're presenting is the beginning of that kind of thing. And they're not. And so I think they think they can charge a premium for all this stuff because of that. I think they're trying to put themselves in the lead for that stuff anyway. And I think they're badly misjudging what everybody's willing to deal with here. Yep. I think it's going to come back to bite them like more than it already has.
But if they have people like Ken and Roberta Williams, developing a game for VR, which they are. Yeah. They're taking their I think it was the first game they wrote and making a VR game. So
and I believe they're doing it, but they're not doing it inside of that other world though. They're just doing it as a game for the device.
And not only that, but they're also making it so you can play it on other systems too, instead of just the VR system. Which I think is more exciting, by the way.
I am excited that they're coming back, because I love Sierra Online, and Yeah. Joel, I know you've done a series of conversations on your other podcast with this stuff, and it's been great. It's been great to kind of reminisce with that stuff. So I'm glad they're going there, but I do think that Meta is being hypocritical. I think Apple's correct. Despite what Apple takes in theirs, at least they're honest about what they're taking. They're open about it anyway. Such as it is. But anyway, I hope to see that rescinded or that explain why they think they have to have it or something.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. I'm something's going to change. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I know that they aren't going to be able, companies are not going to be able to take those larger commissions, but there's cases that are open. I think still, and some of those decisions have yet to come down, but
and I would agree. I would agree. They're entitled to something for their platform. I mean, the reality is they are hosting it.
Yes, they are hosting it.
The question is what? The really question is what are they entitled to, right? I mean, at the end of the day.
Right, how much,
if any at all, are
How much are they really entitled to?
Right. So we'll have to wait and see how that goes. But you know, moving on. moving on. From what I hear right now, there's Chinese, the cities in China, especially ones that have Foxconn factories near or around them, a lot of them are on lockdown. There's a number of cities, and I mean, people have been boarded up in houses because COVID is getting so bad. From what I hear right now, the Chinese COVID lockdowns and are affecting the Apple supply chain. I mean, there's some. I know that there's some MacBook Pro supplies. Finished stock that's having problems getting completed or shipped.
One of the articles I read today, we talked actually more about how the Chinese government was enforcing the lockdowns more this time than before. So people who were working before aren't able to now. So Apple be damned, they're going to have to stay home.
Yep. So they just aren't, that things aren't getting built. You know,
Do you guys think that this is going to cause Apple and other companies to, there's been conversation on and off for a few years now about moving more things out of China and to other places.
Didn't Apple just open up a factory in India and shift some production there?
Yeah, they have. And I'm wondering if that's going to increase or accelerate this kind of thought.
I think Apple, for one, is very happy with what the product that they're getting out of China right now.
They are.
And, and then you got Intel building facilities in Ohio. True. You know, I mean, granted, that's not going to be enough to help the current situation, but it's impacting well more than Apple because that's one main reason why the Commander X16 project started by the 8-bit guy on YouTube, which is supposed to be a modern dream 8-bit computer, and why that's one reason why it's being held up is they can't get all the chips they need to populate the boards.
Sure.
So and that's a small business. That's not even it's not like he's gonna sell millions of those. I might buy one, but you know, would my son? Hell no. You know, but it's affecting Raspberry Pi. I mean,
it's certainly impacting the Japanese companies like PlayStation. They can't.
Yep.
Well, again, I don't know how much of that is real control versus can't get chips, but the point is
car makers too.
It's everywhere. I mean, it's everywhere. It's not just the Chinese, suppliers, but the China's locking down. You know, as they have they're very aggressive about their zero tolerance policies right now. It's going to be interesting to see. We already seen some kind of mid-range impact on this. You know, are we going to continue to have problems? Or are we going to move stuff? That's sort of what I'm curious to see what companies do. And I think they're all kind of throwing their hands up right now. I don't think they have decided what they're going to do as a long-term strategy. But you could have challenges anywhere, right? You could have political challenges. You could have these lockdown challenges. You could have, you know, illnesses. Oh, yeah. You could have natural disasters. We've seen all these things impact industries over the years, and I suppose anywhere they go, there's you know, we've always there's been a movement for lumber years, obviously, to move stuff back to the U.S. but the cost of doing stuff in the US is pretty high. So
well, it's not only the cost, the product you get for the cost is not as good in many cases, and we all know that. It's a hard fact, but we got to believe it.
So I get what the numbers are, and I get why they're kind of doing it, but I'm really curious how much, what's the tolerance level? How long before they say, yeah, we can't do this anymore. This is not acceptable, and we're have to do something different, whatever that might be.
Well, Foxconn went in, I don't know if anybody said it here, but at least I don't recall. Foxconn is opening some plants up in Brazil. And I know that some manufacturing has moved there. I know that Apple just signed a deal with a company in India, and they've moved some production there. So they are looking at alternatives. I just don't know if it's going to be enough to make any kind of a difference this year or next. So,
and some have gone back to Taiwan, and some have gone to other places. I know that there's some diversity, some geodiversity going on in some of these cases, but
right.
But with these disruptions, you got to wonder, you know, I know they're at least taking taking a harder look at this, including Apple, but it certainly is impacting. So which Apple products were you hearing that? I know the MacBook, and I heard the iPad, to a lesser extent, even the iPhone.
I thought I thought the SE was affected. But I think that's the only iPhone that was being moved out of China. I could be wrong. All right. But I thought it was the MacBook Pro.
I think you're right in terms of moving, but I'm wondering which ones. Yeah. I was wondering which ones are getting impacted by the problems in China right now.
Mm. Well, I think in a year we can forget about the SE anyway.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. That's true. Well, it's horrible what is happening. With the lockdowns, and my empathies and my sympathies go out to the Chinese people.
They're being smart, and a lot of countries are adopting this method of, we're just not going to mess with it. We're going to lock down smaller countries, smaller.
Sure.
The United States will never do that. We'll sit here and take another big hit like we did before.
But like I was saying, you know, my empathies and sympathies and prayers go out to the
absolutely
during this hard time. Yep. I know it's got to be very frightening for a lot of the children that are affected and a lot of the families. Oh,
absolutely.
So, but moving on now, you know, this is really the title story for the episode, but I thought it was really very, very interesting. Elon Musk wants to buy 100% of Twitter, and he is offering $54.20 a share, which is a premium over, I think, the $38 a share that the
they closed around 45.
The offer. So he's offering a decent premium for all of the outstanding shares, because he had purchased, I think, what was it, 9% or 19%? Of outstanding stock. He wants to take Twitter to the next level, and he says it needs to be privatized for that.
I think he wants to take it to the Elon Musk level personally.
I
think he's not happy with it, and he wants it to do what he wants it to do.
I know it's I'm wondering how the board is mulling this over. All right.
I think they've said they're not.
They've already put the poison pill out there. There was another group of investors, now he doesn't have enough, or he doesn't have majority ownership right now. All right. Stock.
He can make a play for the stock on the market.
But
you know,
well, I was gonna say, what's further happening, though, is basically, I think what's going to boil down to is, I think at some point they're going to take it to the shareholders, and we'll see what happens then.
Well,
the board is being not being responsible with their fiduciary response. You know, basically, all the shareholders will stand to make a ton of money with this offer, even though their stock just went up, like I think it closed at 45.
Right.
You know. But you know, what's more surprising to me is how many people are really, really concerned about what he would do to Twitter, which he's not going to do anything to Twitter, but basically open it up a little bit, less moderation.
I have a feeling I've been debating in my head whether or not to mention this. All right. I have this feeling, though, that he's going to reinstate the former president.
That's a possibility
in his account. And right. I think that's the largest thing, that's the biggest item on their don't want to do this because list.
Right.
Which I think is absolutely ridiculous. But again,
right.
That's just my opinion on what I think that they may be afraid of. I'm likely wrong. Yeah.
Well, quite frankly, I just need one more good reason to leave that platform anyway.
I was going to say, again, that's another platform I left a number of years ago. I think Twitter is one of those products that it's pissed off its users and it's pissed off other people. Well, but about other people too. It's not just its users that it's pissed off. So it's one of those products. It doesn't seem to make anybody happy ever, but they use it anyway. It's one of those kinds of things.
Yes. It is viewed as a necessary evil.
And I guess at the end of the day, well, it isn't a necessary evil because people like me don't use it. So it's not necessary. No, but right. Some people might think it is.
Oh, well, you aren't necessary.
I personally hate the Twitter software. That's what I hate.
But having said all that, you know, there's a lot of speculation about why he wants it, what he wants to do with it. And quite frankly, I don't care. I mean, so what? He can do whatever he wants. If he buys it, he can do whatever he wants with it. Quite frankly, I think. Once he's bought it, I think it's going in the toilet anyway. So,
here lies the other thing too, is there's lots of people worried about whether he's going to reinstate Donald Trump. I'm like, okay, nobody's forcing you to read his tweets. You can go in. There's this magic thing they still have in it called a block button. You know,
so you don't have to see it in your feed.
But again, I don't care. I think as far as these platforms are concerned, they can block or unblock whoever they want. It's their platform, as far as I'm concerned. And my choice was to leave those platforms for those kinds of reasons. I don't want to read that crap. I'm off it. You know, so if that's the case, you know. People feel like I can't abandon Facebook. I can't abandon Twitter. I got news for you, folks. You can.
Yes, you can.
It is not a necessity. You're absolutely right.
You think it is, but it's not.
I will tell you that I've had some good experiences with Twitter whenever I've really had a problem.
Same.
You know, with customer service from a certain company not giving me some attention to whatever issue I'm having or problem I'm having with a product. You get on Twitter, you throw a raspberry.
Turn the volume up a little bit, and they get upset.
Go ahead and reach out and say, go ahead and hit us up with a private message, and we'll talk about it, and we'll get you.
But in the old days, we called the problem solvers at the local news station, right? Nowadays, we scream on Twitter. It's the same thing. I'm telling you right now. No matter what he does, whether he buys it, whether he doesn't buy it, if people don't like it at the end of the day, some competitor will rise and they'll go to the competitor, because it's happened before, kids. It can happen again. I think this is generating a lot more quote unquote fake controversy than it's worth. I really do.
Well, we'll see what happens, but it's they called it a hostile takeover because they didn't solicit
technically on paper it is. I get that.
Right. You know, and that's fine, but I have, you know, he can go ahead and try to buy a majority stakeholdership and then make the decisions and then take it private and kick everybody out and whatever he's gonna do. I don't know. But we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, again, I don't care what he says or why he thinks he has to do it. I don't care who he blocks or unblocks. I don't pay attention to any of these people. As far as I'm concerned, these people chattering on Twitter, chattering on Facebook, it's a bunch of idiot talking heads. I don't care. I don't care what Kourtney Kardashian thinks about the current political climate. I don't care what Elon Musk cares about. I don't care.
Well, most people can't get behind, get past their tukas. So
yeah,
So it doesn't matter. All right.
That's why you should tell us how you really feel.
They're not following Courtney. They're not following Courtney or Kimberly or any of them.
But for some reason, social media has made
inspirational.
But for some reason, place things like Twitter, things like Facebook, things, you know, all these services have made what the lady is, whoever's talking, it makes it all of a sudden very important. And it's not. Their thoughts are not important. I'm sorry, but they're not.
Most of the it's like this episode. Most of the people that are influencers out there don't have the juice to influence a mosquito, let alone.
So know, as far as concerned, he can do whatever he wants with it. If he wants to get involved in it, I don't even know why. Quite frankly, I can't figure out why he thinks he wants it. That's kind of my take.
I think if you've ever watched, by the way, and it's coming back this summer, The Orville from. Seth MacFarlane. But I just pasted a link in the chat there about, and I was actually just watching this episode right before the show on Hulu, where they have an episode called Majority Rules. This is what I don't want social networks to be like, is what it's like in this show. But
where the more upvotes you get, the more likely it is to happen.
Yep. Somebody does something dumb. And then all of a sudden, oh, they're so horrible. So they got to go to jail. You know, that's not.
No, thank you.
Yep.
Anyway, did you guys know? And here's a segue for you. Did you guys know that there's actually more computers, more PCs out there running Windows XP, Windows 7, and Windows 8 than running Windows 11 at this point?
Oh, but I know why it's become a big deal in the last 2 days.
Big shocker, but you know, I'm actually surprised that those PCs that are running XP are actually even still working. So
right, yeah,
you know. Yeah. I am I surprised that they're not going there? I guess not, because I know we've all certainly talked about this before. I mean, Windows 11 is fine, but I don't think it's all that. It's okay.
Right. No.
One of my coworkers asked in Slack, "Hey, when can we go to Windows 11?" I'm like, "When you get a new laptop."
Yeah, exactly.
What our company will do is that's how they'll roll it out, is when you hit the cycle. And that's the other thing too. I don't know if other companies have done this, but my company used to have a every 2 year cycle on replacing machines. They have now extended it to 4.
I've had my work PC over 3 years, and it's hard. It's slow now. It's true. They've all extended.
Well, especially since nobody's buying desktops anymore. Not even companies are buying desktops because they want to make it so it's flexible, so you can work from home in case of things like pandemic. Well, in the last
3 years, more people work from home than anywhere else.
Right.
If they worked. So I'm not
surprised. You know, this is enough.
Go ahead.
Let's see. My company on their Macs, and they are, when you order a new Mac now, it will be an M1 Mac, and they're running the latest Mac OS, and that's the first time I've ever seen that.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
It's a different thought in the world. I will say, you know, I don't think Windows 11 brought really anything major to the table that we didn't already have with Windows 10. Nothing major.
No. It has the same problem Windows 8 had. It changed the interface, and that's why a lot of people don't like it.
Well, and I think, again, it didn't bring anything to the table, and PC managers just don't jump. You know, unless there's some reason to jump, they don't jump.
No,
but what we're talking about right now is no more than anything else about this system. It's all tied to the fact that the older computers can't use it, so everybody's going to whine about it. That's all it's all about.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I don't see, and let's face it, everybody feels that those hardware limitations are really kind of arbitrary in a lot of ways. At least they feel that way.
Right.
That there isn't a real reason why some of this older stuff can't.
Well, I mean, Microsoft walked it back as far as they could. I mean,
yeah, I think so. Yeah. But having said that, again, I don't think it's I have nothing against Windows 11. I use Windows 11.
I actually like it. I actually like it.
I'm not a big Windows fan to begin with, So for me, 11, 10, yeah, you know, it was all all right. Yep.
I don't use it either, Chris. I use it because I have to. I think couple Windows of places has
a lot of kind of clunky, arcane things under the hood that they really ought to have been focusing on rather than the interface. But, you know, eventually they'll get around to it. They've gotten around to a few of those things. And yeah. I think they'll get there at some point someday.
I agree. They shouldn't have changed the UI. They shouldn't have changed the interface as much as they should have, you know, worked on the underpinnings, the driver base, and security. And just hardened that OS just a little bit more, making it a little less hackable, a little less prone to malware. Would have been a better go than changing the UI. But that's just me. We had another bit in this Windows segment that but I think I'm gonna go ahead and save that for next time. And we'll talk about it then, because I know that could probably take up a great deal of
right.
Too many of us have been into
us going on and on about something I can't imagine.
No, not us. Not at all.
Nah.
I'd like
to go ahead and ask you guys to get your picks out if you've got them. And I want to go ahead and I want to take a moment to let our listeners know that you know, like the website, our editorial policy here for the Pick of the Week segment is that the show picks that we go ahead and we talk about here and that we name out are typically hardware, software, and other items that we like, that we have either individually purchased or actually use and like enough that we want to recommend them to our listeners. They're not paid advertisements or items in which we have any affiliation either in marketing or any other kind of relationship with. If that did happen, we would make a disclosure to that effect before we announced what the pick was. We sincerely believe that the picks that we bring to the show and to our users are picks that we have some like or some belief in, and we just want to share them. So with that,
very true.
With that, Larry, why don't you go ahead and start and kick us off with your pick of the week?
I will, but to kind of carry on with what you were saying there, personally, the things that I buy and the things that I use and hardware and software, I buy them because they make my use. I mean, they make my life easier, or they fit my workflow or whatever. But you know, that's why we do these things. And we've you guys have educated me on some cool things since we first started the show. I've bought a couple of them.
Yep.
But you know, in fact, you can put folks, you can put your pocketbook away on this one because this is a free one. Not everybody uses Gmail. I mean, not everybody, only about 98% of us. Mm-hmm. I know Chris doesn't too often, but actually, in all honesty, we all do use Gmail in some way or another, either with one account for shopping or a handful of accounts for business. And I think, you know, we all know that Gmail can be configured on any email app on the planet, but what a lot of people don't know is that Gmail is not pure IMAP, and it doesn't work perfectly on every email client there is. It works way the best in its own web interface. The problem with that, as anybody that uses more than one account will attest to, there's no way to keep all these tabs open in a browser and know when a new message arrives. You don't get that little ding, you've got mail thing going on, unless you're using an app that's using it. So I mean, all of you Mac users out there who also use Gmail, you remember the pain that Google inflicted upon us way back in August of 2006. I will never forget it, when Google killed our beloved Google Notifier for Mac, that cool little icon that's set up in the Mac tabs or the Mac menu bar. When we lost that thing, I, like millions of others, while kicking and screaming and chastising Google, continued to use it till they absolutely turned it off. They didn't support it for a couple of years, and then they said, that's it, it's gone, and you just couldn't use it. So of all the things that Google's brought to us over the years and subsequently killed, this one hurt me the most. It really did. And during those past 16 years, a lot of Mac menu bar, Gmail notifier, wannabe apps have come and gone. And now almost every single one of them sit up in the Apple store and they languish, and no updates for between 3 and 9 years, except for one called Mail Notifier. And the notifier is not spelled quite like you'd think. It's N-O-T-I-F-R. And I'm quite sure that's because of the developer probably heard from Google and said, you can't call it, you know, notifier, because that's what we called ours. So anyway, it goes back all these years as well. The difference is, while all the other developers gave up keeping their app updated, this developer did not. The guy's name is James Chan, and he's truly become my personal Gmail hero. I could not live without his little utility. I monitor way too many Gmail accounts, and I'm sure most of you have a few, and it doesn't matter whether you have just one or 10. This thing sits quietly in your task or your Mac menu bar, instantly lets you know when you have a new email in any Google account. No need to keep a tab open, nothing. With Mail Notifier, you just click the envelope icon in your taskbar that just lit up with a number that says, ding, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever the number is that's showing. And it's got a drop-down menu of all your accounts, shows again which exact account has the new email. Click on that. It launches your default browser, and you're in your inbox instantly. But like a 3 a.m. infomercial on the cooking channel. There's more, folks. Let's say you use Safari as your default browser, but you'd like to use Chrome for Gmail, which is actually a good thing, since Google built them both, and they do it works better in Chrome. Mail Notifier does this in its setup in preferences. When you set up a mail account, you can have it open Gmail for that account or many accounts in Chrome, even though Safari may be your default browser. So, I mean, this is... very few apps do this for anything. And as you expect, it's got the unread mail count that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've spent a lot of years in the software industry, and I've always been a fan of one-trick ponies. And this is a one-trick pony. It does what it does, and it does it perfectly. And I'd like to see this guy start charging for it, because at the pace Google changes all their APIs, it's got to make it hard for him to constantly update and keep it going for no money at all. But I don't ever want to lose this little guy, Mr. Chan. So thank you very much for keeping your app updated over all these years.
Larry, I was going to say, as you kind of pointed out earlier, I'm not a huge Gmail fit person. I do have a Gmail account. I think, sure, like you said, a lot of us do. I only have one, and I really I use almost all my email accounts purely for email, with the exception of work accounts, which also trigger scheduled events and things like that. Sure. But for the most part, email is just email to me. I don't need all this. I don't need to monitor 17 mailboxes. I can have them all in my one email client, and it's enough for me. Right. However, I totally agree with what you're saying, because I do know I was not one of those people that was dependent on it, but I remember when it went away, because it was such a big deal way back when. And I know a lot of people that are just like you are. And I know that it's appreciative. And I think sometimes you're right. I think sometimes some of the best products I've seen out there are the products that are so hyper-focused. They're only there to do one thing, really, at the end of the day. And if they do it really, really well, I want to give them money for doing, to give them money for that, and so it's nice to see somebody who's done that, who's done a really good job of that.
I agree with you. And unfortunately, I'm kind of like you. I wish I could put it all in one email client, and I could, but I don't want to give up the Gmail UI on the web, and I can't put all my Gmail accounts into one Gmail interface. Google won't let me. They just won't let me.
Right. Yep.
So anyway, that's it, buddy. That's it.
Awesome. Folks.
Well, that's cool.
Cool. I got a retro pick.
I like your pick, y'all.
Yes.
You are Mr. Retro.
Yes. Well, as myself, Christopher Gavula, and Christopher Spera, Larry, you may end up having had a million Altera as your first computer or something, maybe. I don't know. but
Sinclair Time X.
I have one of those.
Okay, yes. One of my first computers that I never owned until now was an Apple II of some variant. In middle school, we used the heck out of them. The art teacher actually wrote up like a program / system in BASIC where we can create like little animations and stuff on a computer, which is very fun to learn on. But I never could get one because, gosh darn it, the Apple IIs were expensive back in the day. You know, you're talking $2,000-$3,000 compared to, I think, my Atari 800 XL probably was $300 when they released it, if I remember right. I had that too, but I found on eBay, I got it for is around $169, which is and on a buy it now, which was really a scary good price because they've been going for depending on what comes with it. Some of the ones that I've seen listed on eBay have the terrible green screen monitor, which I don't want, with it for $500. And I'm like,
wow,
you know, so But I have an Apple IIc right now. That's the compact one, brought out in 1984. And in 1985, when I went to the Boy Scout Jamboree in Fort A.P. Hill, Virginia, Apple is there. They gave away the case for the Apple IIc. And since that time, I've always wanted one. So I finally have one now. Yeah,
finally got something to put in that case, didn't you, Joel?
Now the next thing I'm looking for, I'm probably going to be picking up like a floppy emulator rather than relying on the floppy, which does work. I did test it this evening. Makes that classic chugga 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 chunk chunk sound when you first turn it on.
Yeah,
that Apple. Yeah. Apple was trying to find the hit the first track in a weird and unique way. But anywho,
I envy you. I really do.
Yeah. Yep.
That's exciting.
The only other accessory I want other than a floppy emulator is they did make a actual LCD, a grayscale one, that's actually pretty rare to find. So
hard to find.
We'll keep, you know, I've been actually trying to find one, see if I can't find one and shoot you the link. So I'll keep on looking. You keep on looking and maybe we'll find you one.
I'm really excited for you. That's an excellent find.
Yeah, and I want to actually do some refurbish on it too. Yeah, I want to refurbish it too because the top is pretty discolored. I want to try and do that. Right now, it all works. I'm probably only going to try and take it apart just to take the top part off to retro write it because the bottom's fine. It's got a little bit of scratches and colors, but I can probably take most of that out without taking the board out. So. I also want to make sure the disk mech is fine. It's working fine, sounds fine. I want to see how the probably the worst thing with older computers like that is the belt that runs that floppy drive. So, but Mr. Gavula, and well, actually not Mr. Gavula, Mr. Spera has to go. So we need to wrap this up.
We're actually doing this show one day earlier than we normally would due to the Christian Easter holiday. And for those that celebrate, I want to go ahead and wish you all a happy Easter. He is risen. And for those that do not, well, enjoy the Easter egg hunts and the chocolate candies and all that other good stuff. This has been the iTech Gear Weekly, episode number 16. I'll take hostile takeovers for $43 billion. Recorded live Saturday, April 16th, 2022. Thank you for joining us this week. We hope to see you guys soon. Have a great one.